All right, here we go. We'll kick it off as the professional outfit that I am at Friday morning at a couple of minutes past seven. So not only can I not record, but I'm late. But here we go, right? So I'm going to introduce you. Now, for a long time, I've sort of gone external with a lot of the VIP guests that I've brought in or the special guests or whatever I want to term them as. But ultimately, there's certain people here I keep interfacing with and bumping into and having conversations with that have fascinated me with their stories because it's that whole thing that I promote amongst so many. I mean, it's not until you actually spend some time introducing yourself to someone, having a good conversation, whatever it be, that you find out a little bit about more. And people have got some incredible journeys. So Maddie Lambert's joined me this morning. And Maddie, what is your current role?
So Senior Reliability Specialist. So looking after the crushers, supporting the sites with them across the business. But also kind of lucky where I look after the brand of crusher as well.
So, okay. Well, that makes it awkward that I've got the Reliability Specialist next to me and it doesn't appear that I'm very reliable. But alrighty, so we're interfacing the projects and sites, correct?
Correct.
Right. So that's the piece. That's Maddie, and Matt's been with us how long now?
Four and a half years.
So veteran of the game. So that's an insight. That's who we've got sitting across from us right now. But that's not the fascinating bit, like, because honest, let's not bore ourselves and talk about crushes. I mean, I don't think any of the crushing folk have logged in yet, Maddie. They used to, but, I don't know if the session's got too serious for them or whatever. But anyway, what we'll do is we're going to have a conversation around Maddie because there's a lot of things I want to cover. There's a lot of things I want to talk to here. I actually referenced Matt last week in regards to a project that he sponsors, he supports, he's an advocate for, he's a big part of. And we'll get to that at the end. But first, I want to learn more about Maddie because I've sat down many a time with Matt, talked business with him, talked different things, interfaced with teams, so on and so forth. But again, that stuff is not the interesting stuff to me, with due respect. The interesting stuff to me is what he does in his spare time, which is chooses to run marathons. It's also being engaged with different levels of activity and sport. He's a good member of the community. He's supporting different people out there. He's got a desire to want to sculpt and mold and develop other people and so on and so forth. So I'm really keen on this conversation this morning because I think it's going to be a fun one and it could take us anywhere because I've taken a series of notes here after having a conversation with Matt because we all know my memory is shocking. But ultimately, I love the quote that you speak of, I'm slow, but I love it, right? So just to paint a bit of a picture here, I've got a highlighted paragraph that I'll read out to us that Matt sent through to me the other day. After walking up all night last year, so that was the Ronald McDonald House, up all night.
Yep.
The charitable thing that many of you have undertaken, and well done to you. It's 45 Ks, isn't it?
It was 45. It was supposed to be 42.
Okay, so what does that mean? You drop something and you had to go back?
No. So any marathon you do, generally it always goes above the 42K mark. And last year was 45. The year before was around about 47, 48.
So that's a massive effort. And if any of you are listening that have done it, you know, you're awesome. Like seriously, I know Montana did it last year. I think Montana did it barefoot. And she tells the story. She carried a couple of orphans with her or something like that. She was incredible. But Matt said this, after walking the up all night last year, I told the team members during the training runs that I'd now run a marathon. And if we fast forward, I've got a series of achievements here that Matt's worked through. The Transcend Ultra, which is 71 Ks, just a lazy 71 Ks on a Sunday morning. You know, running festivals, Perth running festivals, 42 Ks. The Winter Trail Series, including a half marathon and an ultra marathon. We're talking anywhere between 21 and 52 Ks. The City to Surf, of course, which many of you have undertaken. And then the WTF Ultra, which is 85 Ks. Now, because this is a program geared towards families, I'm not going to spell out what WTF stands for, but I'm making an assumption that that's what it stands for.
Waterous Trail on Foot.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I thought it was something else. Because I read it the other way around, because then I read 85 Ks, then I read the, yes, what the, but anyway. So there's some massive achievements there. And then when I talk to Maddie, and I don't want to spoil the thunder early, I just want to paint the picture, right? You know, we're talking about this year, we're looking at things like, tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
So we'll start with that in a minute. We're talking about, again, a Troll Centre Ultra, 71 Ks, another water trail foot.
Yep.
Brilliant. which is only a lazy, this time, 164 Ks. I can't even drive that far. Like, seriously. But anyway, we've got the Cape to Cape Ultra, 82 Ks. Another one, 172 Ks. There you go. Beats it by a K. And then the Lark Hill. Oh, good old Lark Hill. Mm-hmm. The Lark Hill Ultra, which is a lazy 100 Ks. And as you've highlighted, I'm slow, but I love it. And you came in here yesterday for a catch-up, and you had the fanciest pair of sneakers I've ever seen on, hence why I've worn my Under Armours this morning that have never really broken dirt. They've walked the bean halls of HQ 20 Waters Drive. That's about the extent of it.
Looking good.
Yeah, I've got Brooks, mate. I've got some Brooks at home that I use for athletics. So let's get the party started. Let's talk about a few things. I also have here from you, Matt, that you represented Australia back in 1999, well before most of these people were born, in indoor soccer. You're also a baseball pitcher for New South Wales, two-time rep. On your third attempt, you blew your shoulder out and never made it to the mound.
On the second game.
On the second game, two pitches in, blew the shoulder. And then my favourite of all time, which I Googled yesterday and IT security jumped all over me, which was you played for the Arizona Outlaws Aussie Rules team.
Yep.
So do you know what? That's where I'm going to start because that's fascinating to me. Why were you in America first and foremost, and how long were you in America for?
So it was actually my wife. So she's a mining engineer, but she specialises in autonomy.
Sorry, she specialises in – have we got a here?
No.
Should we get a here?
You probably should.
Yeah, I think we should. But anyway, go on, please.
So she was part – I'll just quickly touch on. So she was part of the first team to bring autonomous drills to Australia and also mining equipment to Australia.
Wow.
Trained over there with BHP and brought them across. And then BHP decided to do their own autonomous program. They could put in anything. So she was part of that initial team. And then we did that until COVID, pretty much.
Fantastic.
And then 5 days to get home, but that's a different story.
Fantastic. So – whereabouts? You lived obviously in Arizona.
So I lived in Arizona. What was quite nice is the we lived in Gilbert, Arizona for the majority of the period. And Gilbert, Arizona is as family friendly as you get. It's a, don't know if it still is, but at the time it was the 20th safest town in all of America.
Right.
And the most family friendly place you've ever been in your life.
I'm interested.
Rather than the other 19 places. So Gilbert's, and the thing I love about there is, well, it was bloody hot during the summer months. So I was talking sort of 47 plus nearly every day for a good half of the year. So everyone lives indoors,
yeah,
including like the sports stadiums are fully enclosed, air conditioned.
At 20
degrees.
What's the university there called?
There's two of them, University of Arizona and.
I probably could have guessed that, but anyway.
I'm trying to remember the other one.
But is it the Sun Devils?
The Sun Devils. So the Sun Devils are based in Tempe, Arizona. So that's the big team. And then you got the other one down in Tucson, the two biggest teams.
Because I know the Sun Devils actually produces, has produced some good wrestlers. So Olympic style wrestlers out of that program, the Sun Devils program.
And it's one of the loudest, craziest, best position stadiums I've been at for a university type stadium. So it was brilliant, built on the side of a massive mountain.
Which is the fascinating bit, right? Like you watch, whether it be on Instagram or whatever it be, but, or you watch it on ESPN or whatever, but watching college football and college athletics and reels, quite a spectacle, right?
Well, here's the difference, right? You go to the NFL, right? The NFL, they do a play, they stop ads go on the TV screens. Mm-hmm. They do a play, they stop ads go on there. That doesn't happen at the high school and it doesn't happen at the university ones. So it's very interactive. People get involved. It's fun.
Yeah.
Real fun.
I think that's probably a good way to describe it, right? It's fun.
Yep.
Yes, from the optics I've seen, it looks like that's the case, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Arizona Outlaws Aussie Rules team, they would have marched onto that field quite a few times.
Well,
let's just go back. What the hell is the Arizona Outlaws AFL team?
Okay, so in the United States, there's an organization like the AFL here called USAFL.
And what, there's eight people who compete?
Pretty much. the AFL funds about $4 million a year to the USAFL to grow the sport.
It's it.
Now, we had at the time when I was playing, there was about 35 teams thereabouts from different states all around the United States.
What's that, like four different conferences or something like that?
Three conferences. So basically East, West and Central.
Yeah, wow.
And even Canada was involved with it too. And then some of our teams got asked to compete in other countries as well, just for a bit of fun and to promote sport even further. So that's in Central and South America. But it was, I've come to the United States and, hated AFL. I'm a rugby league boy. I played, I never made the reserves, but I tried. But I was, always loved rugby league growing up, hated AFL just because it was the two competing sports. Went to the, Arizona and I was thinking, what sport am I going to play here? Right? I love my sports.
So go back a bit for a minute because I'm still having IT issues. I'm getting distracted, mate.
You're right. Go.
There isn't a rugby league program in the US.
No.
They touched on it, didn't they? There's New York for a while or something.
There is, but you just never hear about it. It's even smaller than Aussie rules.
That's terrifying for me to think. I mean, their greatest exports become the Aussie rules as opposed to the rugby league. But, okay, so go back. So what did you find? An ad in the paper that said, come and join the Outlaws.
There's about 1,000 strong group of Aussies living in Arizona that all catch up. So I called up and there's this gentleman, Morgan Lee. He just goes, want to come and play footy? Thinking it was rugby league.
Mm.
So I've been a Sydney boy. So he went with him. And then there was a team called the Arizona Hawks, 20 years, won a few premierships and everything. So got there and I thought, what's this garbage? And then.
Very park football, very junior sort of park football.
Not even close. So I was playing in a park, don't get me wrong, but very, very talented individuals in that team. And then they decided to split off and they wanted to make their own team. So I helped them make a new team called the Arizona Outlaws.
The Outlaws. And is the Outlaws, do you follow them now?
Unfortunately, when I left and during COVID, the team sort of disbanded. And then I shipped all my old players back to the Hawks. Back to the Hawks.
So if people wanted to watch the Hawks, the Arizona Hawks, say if anyone's got an old analog TV from the 80s with rabbit ears, and half the people listening wouldn't even know what I'm saying, but ultimately you get it home tonight, you could turn it to SBS Viceland at about 2 a.m. and you could move the rabbit ears around and probably through a fuzzy screen watch the Hawks running around.
Well, that's one way. Or ESPN.
Oh.
ESPN. So the games, play it on ESPN, over there anyway, or from Australia you can watch ESPN 4, I think it's called. You have to stream it online.
No one's writing that down. No one's writing that shit down, right? All right, let's talk about you more.
All right.
Let's talk about you. Let's get to the cool stuff, right? Not saying that wasn't, by the way. I mean, Sanjo's just gone on eBay and just looked for a Hawks jersey. And if he has, he's fired. But anyway, right? So let's talk about this. You did the Up All Night. Is that the first time you've done something of that magnitude, or have you done previous runs, marathons, whatever else? Or was that really the starting point?
That was the starting point.
And what was your motivator to do the Up All Night for Ron Donald House? Other than the obvious to raise some money for charity.
I did the helping cook for the kids.
Yes.
That was the thing that made me definitely sign up and do my best to kind of raise as much funds as I could. Because that really, I don't know, impacted me. I got a couple of young kids.
Yes.
And seeing how the families are dealing with those kids, like such strong people, right? What they're dealing with.
Yeah.
And then playing with some of those kids all dressed up, and our team went as superheroes, and being able to play with those kids was, I don't know, it's pretty special, right? No, I had to fight back tears while playing with those kids because I was thinking back towards my own kids, right, when I'm doing this. And yeah, it was a special night, and it was, I just went, you know what? I've been a bit lazy lately ever since I got back after playing footy in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just thought, I can do something here. And I thought, let's get up and go for a walk. Right? Thinking that walking was a lot easier than it actually was on the day.
Yeah, so you started with just a lazy 45Ks. Right?
Yep.
Montana said that. Montana said that she, you know, went out and she wore high heels. Her best pair, and she got about 43 Ks in and she regretted that decision. You know what? That's really cool. Like we did recently, we did the Ronald McDonald House thing as well. We weren't as cool as you guys. We didn't dress up as superheroes by any stretch. I took a bandana. And I took a bandana predominantly because I'm a bald man and, you know, you need to keep sweat out of your eyes and out of the cake that I made. But I'm with you, mate. Like seriously, we did it as a team thing and, we want to do it again. And, you know, it gives you a hell of perspective and gratitude because, you know, I was horrified, I guess is one way of putting it. You know, there's a young girl there and she'd been there for something like, she'd been just short of 2 years. That's the only place she'd known, just living in that facility. And then she had the brothers and sisters and the dad that had come down from the country and mum stayed with her the whole time. And it sort of disbanded the family, you know, tough stuff, right? And then there was one kid there that was sort of head to toe in braces. I don't know what the reason for all that was. That doesn't matter. So I'm with you, mate. A hell of a sobering and humbling experience to see that.
And if you don't mind me just, like there's please. Some people probably saw my little bit that we wrote about the young girl that I was trying to play with in that article that came up the other day. But the other one was, and I think the one that it just showed me how strong this particular family was. So I was about a 6-month-old kid and a baby and a 5-year-old boy. And the mum and dad, I was talking to them, they're like, it's fantastic. Our boy, he's finally cancer-free, right? They've been fighting for a couple of years as well. And I said, you must be really relieved. And they said, we would be. But our 6-month-old daughter has now been diagnosed with cancer as well. And I'm just like how strong they must be, right? And then it was like this walk and raising support. And even if it's just raising awareness, right, not just the funding. Funding helps, but raising awareness. Like it just made me want to do anything I could and try to, you know, bring in as much people as possible to get on board with this and then donate and help cook and all the rest of it, because I couldn't imagine how strong this family must be to be able to deal with something that my son's finally cancer free now, having to go through this all again with another kid.
Correct.
Holy shit.
I don't know. You know, like these sessions that we do, this Green Juice podcast, it's designed to provide us a suite of different things from, you know, challenging our thinking to providing some skills and some insights from other people and everything else. But it's also always been around allowing us to reset a little bit for the following week or the next week to come. And that is it's a bit of a somber start to the day, I guess, on a Friday, but it's also a really energizing start to the day because it puts things into perspective for us, you know, because we're going to have a day today where we're going to be concerned about this or concerned about that or, you know, what's on the menu upstairs or whatever it may well be, or someone took my last post-it note, that kind of thing, which we do because we're human beings. But when you stop like we're doing right now and think about those kind of things, I mean, that experience of one, having a child with cancer, and absolute, you know, greatest respect to any of those families and the kids associated, but then to find out, yeah, we just got over that. Let's celebrate a little bit, and here we go again.
Yeah, and not even being able to celebrate the fact that your kid is because the other one has.
Yeah, it was a bit momentary, right?
Yep.
Wow, mate. So, look, let's bring it forward then a little bit. So you did the walk. You did the 45Ks, and as you described to me, you had to piggyback Montana across the finish line with her high heels in tow. She actually tells the story she carried you and a couple of other people. But anyway, you turned around, you said to the people you're with, I'm going to keep running. I'm going to keep doing this stuff. Is that how it played out?
It was actually about 2 weeks before the event. We decided to go on one last big walk, right? And then we did 25 or 30 Ks. And we're walking along it. And I looked at him and I just thought, you know what? I've always wanted to run a marathon. How about you? And they're just like, yeah, I always definitely have. And I said, well, why don't we just do it afterwards? So there was a group of us that just went, yeah, we're going to run a marathon.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the only one that did it, by the way. But, it was,
I can appreciate that. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Listen, I'll see you later.
Yeah, right. So it was literally as soon as I finished, it's funny. And the same with marathons, right? When you finish something so strenuous, yeah, there's a sense of relief. And then there's a sense of, I'm never going to do this again. This is the worst thing of my life. Why did I do this? Right. And you get emotional. And then about an hour later, all right, I'm going to sign up for a marathon now.
Wow.
Straight afterwards, it's addictive, right?
Look, I can see here the numbers jump, right? I mean, it's what's available, what's on and where you're at from a conditioning perspective. But at the same time, if I look at here from last year to the year ahead of us, the numbers jump quite dramatically. So you start taking on greater challenges is what I'm saying.
It is. And even what I didn't put in there is the fact that for 2026, I've already included Delirious West 220 miler in there as well.
What's it called?
Delirious West.
Yeah, not signing up. It's in the name. So I don't envision that Delirious West is just a wander around a park and look at the ducks.
No, that one's kind of crazy, that one. So that'll take about 4 days to complete. So.
Oh my God. All right. Here we go. Yabaroo Ultra. Tomorrow morning.
No, tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, we start.
Oh, well, that's all right. You get to sleep in.
We start at 3 o'clock. So we'll wait till it gets nice and hot and then we start running.
50 Ks.
Yep.
Running.
Yep.
Where is Yabaroo for starters?
Up Joondalup way.
Yeah, well, that explains it. Right. Like, seriously, who goes to Joondalup? Like, seriously. I didn't even know the freeway went that far, to be honest with you. So 50 Ks, is it flat road, trail? What is it?
That's probably going to be the easiest one I've run. I think it's over the 50 Ks. I think it was 52 Ks, that one, and it was 500 meters elevation, which is quite low considering. So that one should be still slow, but one of my quickest.
You're not selling it. You're dead set. Like, you're sitting here and you're saying it should, and see, I'm in mining, right? And shoulds are half to middle.
Yeah.
And you're sitting here and saying should, and your body language is saying, yeah, it doesn't sound that easy.
Oh, it's not easy. It's absolutely not easy.
Well, it's not, because it's 50 Ks full stop, right?
Nah.
Numbers don't lie.
The thing that hurts is, for me, when I run, the first 3 Ks are the things that kill me the most, right? Because you have to fight through. Your body just says, what are you doing? You're being silly, mate. Just stop. And so I fight through that first, and you just got to keep pushing, and convincing yourself that everything's all good. I get past that first 3 kilometers. Mm. And then once I get through that, everything just becomes easy. Mm-hmm. As far as, I'm not trying to convince myself that I'm not in pain. Everything, a lot of health issues, but my body's got a lot of joint pains and bits and pieces. Once you push through that, everything just.
So that's a bit I want to grab onto now. So, and you and I have spoken about this, and you're happy for me to talk into this. So I read this bio, right, of the runs that you undertake and the runs that you're going to do going forward. I see you strut around the halls here and you look like an absolute athlete, especially those shoes yesterday, moonwalking across the floors of level 10. I sat down with you a year or so ago and we were having a conversation, as we do as blokes, we're having a conversation around health and everything else. And I was explaining that situation that I came off the back of and well known, I guess, because I've over promoted it. But when I had the stroke situation and the stroke was triggered by a fibrillation in the heart, that was where that came from. Well, conspiracy theorists will say the vaccine, whatever, right? It's all fixed now, by the way. But I sat with you and I was talking to you about that. And then you sat here and I'm looking across at you, this super fit guy running all these marathons, doing X, Y, and Z, high level representative in the world of bounce indoor soccer, Arizona Cardinals. Arizona Outlaws. They've got a little shed just away from Cardinal Stadium. And you popped your shirt open, which happens to me often in my office. No, it wasn't. And, Pete wasn't here either, but you popped your shirt open and you said, yeah, look at this. And there's a big extrusion on your chest, a big lump on your chest, and you got a pacemaker. Yeah. So we've all just been listening to you talk about running 164Ks, 170Ks, carrying, this and that. And you're sitting here as an inspiration in regards to those things that you do. And then you loosely mentioned, I've had some health issues and some setbacks. Let's just put that into perspective a little bit. You've got yourself a pacemaker.
Yeah.
How long you had a pacemaker for?
2016 was put inside me.
Yeah. And how did that come about?
So atrial fibrillation is, throughout the year. So since I recognized that there was something wrong, it was early teens. And then over the years, I kept having all these monitors put on me and it would never happen at the exact time that I was reporting. And then over the years, it just slowly got worse and worse and worse. And then I was actually working at Telfer at the time and I could always control, right? Whenever there was an issue, I had multiple ways which I was able to control it and bring it back into rhythm, and then I'll just move on. Mm-hmm. It wasn't going to make me pass out or anything until one time I was at Telfer, and then it was just, one night on night shift, and I just went bugger it. I laid back on the, bench there, and I was like, I couldn't control it. Right? Mm-hmm. It was concerning me. And then, anyway, I went to the doctor, and then they, so it was heart block and, atrial fibrillation, but they put me, this is, I don't know how many times over the years I've been, had to the wires inside me doing
angiograms
and all sorts of stuff.
And also, is that right? So also the attempts to restart it, like the cardioversions and stuff like that as well?
Well, that was actually after a pacemaker.
Oh, is that right?
So I sat there for 5 hours, laying on the bed, all the wires inside me, watching the screens. And they're just asking me every time they put different types of drugs in me to try and stimulate it. And then it got to about the 4 hour mark and they're like, nothing's working. And then he goes, I'll just try something else. He did. And then I went, that's it, mate. And he goes, and then you just hear him go, abort, abort. And then I'll close and then sleep.
That's never a good thing, right?
Abort.
Abort. You're on a surgery table and everyone starts screaming abort.
Was it abort me or abort the surgery?
Correct. A bit of both.
Yeah, and then that was sort of, I wake up and he just goes, you need a pacemaker. We know what it is now. The top of your heart, you get all these electrical signals going through it and it doesn't know when to squeeze at the right time. And then the bottom of the heart does a big sort of squeeze and then knocks it out of rhythm.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So I'm just looking at him going, what are you talking about, mate? And my wife, current wife, she's, I was with her for like 3 months and she's in the bed going, what have I got myself into here?
Yeah. And, well, I mean, it was well before that.
And he goes, oh, let me get someone who speaks your language. And I won't use the language, but yeah.
Please don't. This is a family show.
I won't. But this Canadian bloke walks in from the pacemaker company, Biotronic, and just goes, you effing need this. And I went, what? And he goes, speaking freely, you effing need this. And this is why. And he told me.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, no dramas. They put me back to sleep and I woke up again with a pacemaker inside, wow. Right? But
so how old were you when that got in, put in?
How old was that? Jeez.
I don't know. That's why I'm asking the questions.
30.
So 30s. So young men, yeah. Right? And one of the worst things in those situations as well is hearing the language from surgeons and everything else saying you're too young to have a pacemaker because it's associated with someone that's in their latter years. So.
And I will just touch on that, right? Because this is something which is sort of, shaped my pain threshold, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is they brought me in, and they had to keep me partially awake, right? So awake, but couldn't feel anything. And I'm laying there on the table and they sort of lay you on this flat board on your back, arms like this on the, and legs sort of spread out a little bit with your head sideways. And they put this cover over the top of you with just this spot here showing. And everything was good for the first 5 minutes. And then I felt every single cut in 100% pain. And I started screaming and they're just like screaming at me to stay still while they're trying to work out the anesthesia. And like I could feel the blood just squirting everywhere, like out of me, cause I cut into the artery at that time and everyone's.
Ah, it's not really a major artery, is it?
Right. And so everyone ran in there. I had two nurses on my arms holding me down, two on my legs holding me down while someone was going to get these straps while the doctor couldn't stop cause he was trying to stop me bleeding out. And, a 30 to 40 minute surgery ended up going for about 4 hours. And it was about 10 minutes it took them to get my anesthesia right. In the end, they just went bugger it and they put me to sleep.
So what was the problem there? Was they couldn't get the anesthesia right?
Yeah.
So it was like me using the podcast technology this morning. Is that what you're saying?
That's what it felt like.
Like seriously, was it like that?
It was like that. They gave me what they thought was right, but for some reason, it wore off quicker than they expected.
Yeah.
And then.
Probably because they hadn't turned the tap on.
That would be about right. Like and you can hear someone beside you just going, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'll sort this. And it's just not good enough, right? It's just not good enough.
So you're in the crucifix position,
mm-hmm.
being held down.
Mm-hmm.
Someone's cutting through your flesh and your body.
Yep.
Right. While trying to jam a small metal box into your chest at the same time and someone saying, look, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't be doing this.
Yep. And I,
it was your Friday.
I was literally screaming, right? Yeah. I could crystal clear hear her apologizing and the others just going, hold him down. He can't move. Right. And they're screaming at me just to not move while someone's cutting into me. And it was actually seven, 7 slits because they have to do it in layers to try and prevent the scarring and all the rest of it. And then they've got to feed the wire directly down into your heart. So woke up, they took all the covers off me because I woke up before they wheeled me out. Blood on the lights and on the window. It was so much blood everywhere. So it was,
did they give you a discount?
I don't think I paid for any of it. They probably
charged you for the cleanup bill.
Yeah.
Being hospitals, but anyway. So the bottom line is we sit here, and that's the point I really wanted to highlight to everyone listening. I mean, you're an individual that went and chefed at Ronald McDonald House, as people have done across the business here. It hit you hard, right? In the right way. You then decided you'll do the walk up all night, the 45K for Ronald McDonald House. Leading into that, you turned around and you said, you know what, I might start running some marathons. Never run them before, but how hard could they be?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you're doing all this while you've had your own issues associated to having a pacemaker,
mm-hmm.
Which many would use that as the quickest excuse out to say, well, mate, I can't do that because it's, you know, I've got a pacemaker. It's quite remarkable. It's quite inspiring, to be honest with you. And so if anyone's sitting here this morning and listening and thinking, you know, I was going to start going to the gym, but you know, you've got to understand I've got this, an ingrown hair on my shoulder and I'm not sure if I could. It's pretty remarkable stuff, right? Also, Matty, I know for a fact you've broken 179 bones in your body and counting.
67.
Well, same.
Not counting.
Yeah, we exaggerate. I can exaggerate on this. It's my show, right? But also, I want to share the story that you shared with me yesterday in conversation, the leg injury that you sustained, and just walk us through that a little bit. Now, this morning, I hope we're not grossing people out, but it's building a point. It's really building a point. Well, I hope it is. Otherwise, let's just all give good feedback and move on. But talk to me, what happened to your leg? The burn injury.
I'm glad you got, yeah. You know, clarify that.
No, that's the way you walked in here, to be honest with you.
All right. So I was going camping and, had everything all packed into my ute, ready to go, except for when, better bring some water with me. So I went and grabbed my 20 litre drum of water, my jerry can and a bit of slime in the bottom. So I cleaned it out. And then I thought, I'll sterilize it with a bit of hot water. So I filled a big pot full of water, poured it in. No lid on my jerry can. And to this day, I can't tell you why I was wearing them, but I was wearing my rodeo boots. So, and they go.
Just keep going. Keep the momentum.
And, anyway, so I was, had my leather boots on. I poured the water in. I was walking outside and just as I walked out the door, that from top to bottom with boiling water, it split. It filled up my boot all the way to the top, and then with leather it constricts, and it just went, sucked it in, and it held all the boiling water in there and just was cooking my leg. So here's me on the ground screaming, lifted up my leg to try and help to rip it off, and then it started running down my leg towards my hip and was just burning more. So I had to drop my leg down using my other foot and hands, just kept tearing at it until it was over a minute before some of the skin and hair and everything started to let go and the boot came off. Now the bits that weren't, third degree burns were the ones that were killing me. Like just so much incredible pain.
The nerves are still there, right?
The majority of my leg, it was done, right? It was cooked. There was nothing left there, right? So I couldn't feel pain in a bunch of it, but the bits I can, which was scattered all over my leg, were absolutely horrendous. So anyway, yeah. And briefly going to touch on this bit, right? Cause it's going to build to a sad part of my story, right? I went to the doctors after calling him up and got there and he goes, holy crap, don't go to emergency. This is way worse than I thought. So he's me with a bucket and my partner at the time driving me around, went to the hospital. They told me that, I wasn't bleeding and it wasn't heart related. So, I just had to wait there. Screaming. So this was at the one in Perth CBD, that hospital.
Yeah, so it's the same hospital that cut you.
Right. And it was, so anyway, I was in there for about 4 hours before someone saw me. And then they just told me it was, extremely bad, third degree burns. They wrapped that up and they said, there's no one in the burns ward to help you at the moment. So you just go home and come back on Monday. This happened on a Saturday. I screamed all night in bed and just like,
that seems remarkable. That seems remarkable. They sent you home.
Well, they did. I came back the next day and said, don't care what you're doing. And they told me that they worked until 12 o'clock that day. I could force my way in there to sing. So I did. They said, how dare they send you home? That should have never happened. And actually, they sent me home with crutches, which immobilizes it, makes it worse. Now, with burns, different types of burns take longer to develop, right? Hot water burns will take 24 to 48 hours to fully develop on your leg after you've cooled it down, right? So they admitted me to hospital straight away, but they didn't have a section in the burns ward. And this is, this next bit was the most pain I've ever been in. I was laying in bed and she goes, we're going to wash it down with this cooling gel and then get it all wrapped up. So she soaked all the stuff in. She wrapped all the, my leg up and my foot was extremely bad. They wrapped it all up and then I was screaming, like deafening in the hospital screaming. And then she kept giving me medication. She goes, I've given you 24 hours worth. I can't give you anything else. We'll overdose you. And then, she ended up coming in. She wrapped up a pillowcase, like a knot, and told me to bite on it. All right. And while she's trying to sort out what to do, and then came running in. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I made a huge mistake. Please, please, right? And please what? Anyway, she soaked all of them in antiseptic, right? And she wrapped firmly in like sponges in antiseptic and put it straight on the meat on my leg and then wrapped it up tight.
I think I'm going to throw up and faint at the same time in a minute. Matt, you need a good lawyer.
Well, I probably should have been that
you
one.
Could, what, sure. What, the first one wasn't bad enough? Like, seriously, you could have some cash. You could probably buy this joint, to be honest with
you. But you know why I didn't? They got me into the burns unit, and I met some of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life, right?
Yeah.
The doctors, the nurses, they were the ones that did the Bali bombings as well, right?
So, yep.
But not just that. Right. They coach you to do what you think's impossible, which is get out of bed. Right. As soon as you drop your leg, it feels like someone is literally tearing your leg straight off.
Wow.
Any limb. They team you up with someone to go to the gym, and the lady I was teamed up with, or the young girl, was in the fires back in early 2010s, right down at Albany. And a lady, they come over the fire truck, there was nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So they laid down. There was another lady laid over the top of her, and they put the fire blanket over the top. And apologies to anyone, but and hopefully no one does know the person, but the lady literally melted over the top of this girl.
Yeah, yeah.
And this girl had 80% burns to her body, and we were like teaming up with each other to try and work out and fight through those tears and help to rehabilitate each other, right? And seeing mine was nothing compared to some of these people in there, right? And seeing how strong and passionate they were to try and survive, some of them, right? But to get through this, and that was inspirational. And I suppose that's why I lost track of what happened previously, because of my great experience I had towards the next 9 weeks I had in that hospital until I left.
Matty, it's incredible. And I've got to admit, I wish this was the Joe Rogan podcast, because right about now I'd be having a shot of whiskey or a cigar or something, because it's a pretty rough, hard start to the conversation, and it's getting us really to a, let's turn this around a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's painting the picture of who's Matt Lambert and what have you been through and so on and so forth. And why do you do what you do? And, you know, it's when you've been through some hardships and some tough times and some challenges, it does. It gives you a different perspective on the world, doesn't it? You know, you look at things completely differently. You have to, there's something wrong if we don't. And hopefully for most people listening, never go through any level of hardship. I mean, most people on the face of the planet will.
Yep.
But the human spirit is quite a powerful thing, right? And then you can learn sort of tools and techniques can help through that process, but we are pretty incredible what we can actually do. But as I always talk about, you know, you can never do it alone. You know, you need a tribe around you. You need some people that can support you. And I know when I've had my, shakes and bumps, if you like, I always wanted those people around me. I wanted the mentors. I wanted the role models. I wanted someone to help inspire and to measure yourself against and also to give you a bit of a beacon, a bit of a guiding light as to how you can move forward. I mean, you're just telling the story of the young girl and the burns and everything else. I mean, Exactly. I mean, your world was coming crashing down at the time. You've melted your leg, and worse than that, you've damaged your cowboy boots. But ultimately, you know, this young lady, you know, she was inspirational to you because what you were going through failed in comparison to what she was, and she was showing strength and character and all those things. So the piece I want to get to now, I want to talk about the piece of where maybe we can, some offerings for people listening or others, and we talk about the Spoke for a Bloke, Spoke with a Bloke organization. I want to talk about that before we go to Walk with a Bloke, right? So I want to talk about that first. So just give me an insight and give everyone else a bit of an insight into Spoke to a Bloke. Tell me about the organization.
So, well, just a little bit of a background, right? I wanted to actually get involved with an organization, right? Which I truly believed had, that weren't in it for any benefit of their own. Mm-hmm. And that's, believe it or not, that's really, really hard to find. I've been involved with a lot, and truly hard to find people that just want to make a difference and improve people's lives, right? So anyway, I spoke to a bloke is, it's a men's organization, primarily focused at suicide prevention, and also general men's wellbeing and creating, yeah, giving the opportunity for blokes to become mates, mm-hmm. right? And make new mates. So what it was there's a group of, five gentlemen who decided one day they're going to go for a, 25k walk. And they're just them and them alone. Once a year they'll do it. And then, one year, a couple of months beforehand, one of those five gentlemen, died by suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And all these gentlemen were brothers. They were brother-in-laws and best mates.
Mm-hmm.
Now they decided that, they would continue that walk, 2-3 months later. And they'd invite anyone who wanted to come for a walk run. So they all come for a 100-something people turned up, right? Because it was Nick was the gentleman's name, in support of Nick. And these other gentlemen, they just went, you know what, we can do more here, right? Like this is inspirational that we had 100 blokes turn up. And not just that, out of those 100 blokes, some of the conversations that were had during that walk, were talking about their general well-being and health and issues they got. Also, just making new mates, talking about fishing, footy, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it was founded initially, all right? And then they went, well, we need to do something. We can't just go for a walk, right? So then they started looking at how do we reach out to young fellas a bit more, right? So then they created their digital program. So, yeah, if you are finding it a bit too hard to make mates, we've got the digital content from psychologists and leaders in health around the world and sports stars and everything included.
Right.
So there's that side. We've got the side where we've realized that, when we're looking after the blokes, when you do psychology and psychiatrists, the private healthcare and even public healthcare, we usually only fund so many before it gets too expensive. So then we've created a program where we'll actually take over and continue funding.
So they get their support, yeah.
So that way they still get their support, right? So we've got our own psychologist, which will do that also.
Yep.
And then we're about to announce we're going to offer free mental health first aid training for people as well. And we've got a few other special ones which are on their way, but that's pretty well the organization.
That's pretty cool.
Mm.
So, for everyone listening, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about Spoke to a Bloke, and then we're going to transition this to Walk for a Bloke, Perth, right? That being said, I would suggest to everyone that's listening, we're looking at it through the lens of this organisation, hence the language Spoke to a Bloke, Walk for a Bloke and everything else, but I suggest that the psychology, the philosophy, the tribalism, all those things combined are applicable regardless of our diversity levels or wherever we're at or whatever else. So definitely the messaging here is the takeaway, you know, at the end of the day, the messaging is for male, female, other alike to take away from that, you know what, there's some things that I could probably apply here. There's some things that could actually probably support me or whatever it may well be, just because this singular organization is focused towards the bloke, in this time. I still think there's, and hence why I want to sit down with you this morning, Matt, there's so much learning here for just all individuals, because I am huge on, like I've already highlighted, the fact that we don't do it alone. We need people around us and to support us and to help us. And then if you can, you know, if we segue now to walk for a bloke, if we combine that with physical activity and sunlight and the happy chemicals that are generated on the back of just getting out and moving around and having community and relationship, pretty powerful tool, right? So walk for a bloke here in Perth. Let me just have a look at this again. You could tell it off the top of the head, but I'm going to do it. 22nd of March, so coming up on a Saturday, we kick off. We look at walking 25 kilometres, correct?
Correct.
So tell me about Walk for a Bloke Perth. What does it look like? How do people get associated? How do people get involved? Well, what's the go?
I want to take a quick backwards step first.
Yeah, please. Right. Well, you can't do that on the walk.
Right, I can definitely go. Oh, I can do a walk backwards 25Ks. So there's quite a lot of studies done, right, with blokes and ladies, right? But specifically to this one is blokes generally after around about the 30 years of age mark, right, mm-hmm. they lose pretty well their entire friends group, right? There's those lucky ones there that, yeah, maintain those friendships. There is, and I'm not talking about, I'm talking about close friends, those ones you can really count on when you need it, right? Those really
3 a.m. friends.
Right, the 3 a.m. friends, right? The ones that will celebrate success and push you to do better. Most blokes lose all them by about 30 years of age, and there's multiple reasons why that occurs. So this is the one here is we wanted to create an environment where we can make new mates, right? Mm-hmm. So the blokes generally are not very good at it, right? We can meet them at work, and we can meet them elsewhere. We mates for life, but meaningful mates is what we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So this walk creates that opportunity. So what does it look like, Walk for a Bloke Perth? So I can tell you what we're already doing. We're already doing training walks with a group of people. We've got 100, and as of this morning, we had 153 blokes already signed up.
Well, so you've walked this morning, is that what you're saying?
No, not this morning.
No, I mean, you only got a lazy 50Ks tomorrow afternoon. What, didn't you get out of bed to go for a walk this morning?
Yeah, I'm not doing anything.
Well, you did walk the stairs to get here, but anyway.
No, I took the lift. Now you made me lose track.
Sorry, so you got 100 odd people signed up?
Yeah, right. So we do these walks every couple of weeks, right? So we're building a community here, right? And right. What I is, yes, we've got this one big event, but the plan is that we're creating these teams amongst our event that are going to continue to do these walks after we finish this event all year round. So the walk, so I'm going to take you a quick, this is what's going to look like on the day, right?
Yeah, please.
We're all going to turn up there. I've got 10 marquees set up with different organisations, and if there's anyone here that has got any ideas, because we're still filling these marquees. So
right.
A little bit different, right? For some reason, charities fight for naming on any sort of event, right? And I can understand to a degree, but we're all doing some great stuff. Let's share the love, right?
Yeah, I agree.
So we're a little bit different. We've actually said, listen, the event you spoke to, it's a walk for a bloke, right? But get a team with whatever charity organisation you're involved with, and I'll leave. And we'll have a marquee at the end and show what you can do to support these blokes as well. So we're doing that with 10 marquees at the end, we've got a few scaffold companies, so we're going to build a scaffold with a big finish line, all the rest of it, right? But we've got, on the day, I've got a gentleman coming in from another organization, and he specializes in teaching blokes how to talk to each other.
Wow.
He doesn't charge for it. He literally goes around and teaches blokes how to chat. So he's going to spend 5 minutes, tips and tricks, how to talk to blokes. How to start, enter and finish a conversation and sort of promote us to do that on the walk. We've got the 25Ks, we've got 5 aid stations, a few fun things along the way as well. And then at the end, once we finish, we entice people to stay for a bit and celebrate those other blokes that's coming over the finish line, because to create that atmosphere. And then, from 11 to approximately 2:30, we've got a function at the end at the Windsor Hotel, just to sort of mingle a little bit up.
Yeah, socialise, yeah.
But here's the thing. Yes, the walk itself is for blokes. I can tell you we've already got 17 volunteers, all the ladies in, not just in our lives, but from some of the sponsorship organisations, just and 3 randoms that just put their hand up, said they want to be involved.
Yep.
Families can be involved at the start line.
Yeah.
We want the families there at the finish line. We certainly want everyone there, families, yep. friends, everyone yep. at their end function, right? Because this is, yes, it's about blokes, but those people around the blokes to help support them.
Most definitely. Most definitely. And I like that. I know we talked about it the other week. We were in a meeting and the question was asked about can ladies, undertake the race? And it's a hard question to answer. You know, in the modern day, we need to be able to be very respectful and inclusive and everything else, and rightfully so. But I understand what we're trying to achieve here. It's really about, we are unique. We have our unique DNA as to how we operate and build this mateship, which is crucially important.
Yeah.
It's funny, my sister, not funny as in, funny, but my sister, I don't think she said a profound thing in her whole life. But mind you, she's an educator, brilliant. But anyway, she actually said once to me, she said, years by gone, she said, you know, blokes need their mates. And she said, speak on her behalf, but she said, females often, quite often need the family. They want the family around them and everything else, but blokes need their mates.
Yep.
And I like your point too about we hit that sort of age of 30 and things do change dramatically. We're raising families, we're focused on careers, all these different things. And we do lose a sense of purpose and a bit of what's in us, that bit of hunter-gatherer type DNA that wants us to sort of bond together with others and go wandering, if you like. So I think this is great. So given the time frame we've got afforded to us, because we've only got a little bit of time left. If people are listening right now, people could sign up for this, right? They can still sign up for this.
Yep, definitely.
And if we've got people listening here that has a partner, a brother or something like that that would like to sign up, we can sign up for this.
100%.
Is that correct?
Yep.
So what's the best way to do that? Are we talking about the website? What are we doing?
It's on that Walk for a Bloke website. Jump on the website. It's about, actually, you can see it on your
prep. Yeah, I do right. Prep work. I just don't know how to use the IT, but I do prep work.
And thanks, Montana. I'm guessing you got that up on the screen now. Jump on the link and all the details are there, plus where to access the help down the very bottom of the page as well. There's a bit of a fact there. But jump on board. It takes about 5 minutes to go through it. There is a MRL gents team as well for anyone internal that wants to sign up too.
So can people come and find you, Maddie, and have a chat to you?
Any day of the week. Not
so, I mean, if anyone ever, look, I strongly advise against walking up to level 10. There's not much happening up there, to be honest with you. But if you do want to find Maddie, he's up on level 10, or you can reach out to Maddie directly through Teams, whatever, myself equally, because I'm promoting this strongly as well. Get involved, mate. It's a great start. And what I like about it, Matt, is, so if I'm hearing you correctly, it's not a bunch of elite athletes. It's not a bunch of triathletes. Go back to your original quote. I'm slow, but I love it.
I've got a bloke in a wheelchair doing this.
Seriously? Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I might, if I undertake this, there's a chance I might pop him out of the wheelchair and take that about the 10K mark. Really give us some thought, people. I mean, to summarize all of today's session, you know, I'm inspired by Matt's work and what he's doing, because we're talking about Matt's like every single one of us. He's here doing his day job. He's got a family. Met his son this morning, which is fantastic. We left his son in the care of Montana. I don't know where either of them are right now, but that's okay. And you know, at the same time, he's found some purpose in his life, helping and supporting and sculpting other people. He's been through some real hardships himself. He's got every reason to have excuses. You know, it'd be easy for you, Matt, to turn around and say, mate, you got to understand, mate, I got a pacemaker, or you got to understand, mate, I burned my leg or whatever else, but no excuses. Signs up for things, gives it a go, and the satisfaction that comes out of it. That was a conversation we were having yesterday. What do you get out of it? And it's the satisfaction of achievement. And you just said it before earlier. You start these things, they hurt, they suck, you question why I'm doing it, but then you get to a point afterwards where it's like, I did it. And we talk about doing psychology, Dr. Phil Jauncey, and I spoke to the Moz yesterday, and, you know, the Moz repeats himself deliberately and reiterated some of these things, and I was saying it to a group yesterday. It's not about waiting till we've got a positive mind to go and do something positive. It's actually go and do something positive, and the outcome of doing is it will adopt a positive mind. Because if we're waiting for that moment and that day to get a positive mind, the unfortunate reality is it may never come, or something will distract us from that. So
What I would say, Clay, is
Please.
The feeling of being proud of yourself for completing something that you don't know how many people told me in my first marathon that I couldn't do it. I almost gave up at the 19K mark, and I don't know if you know Chi at all, right? But Chi,
he's listening in this morning.
Maybe, but Chi was at 19Ks. He's like, you can do this, mate. Don't stop now. Keep going, right? And I had these great people along the way that pushed, but the sense of being proud of yourself is, I don't know, it's addictive now, right? I love it. Absolutely love it, right? And that's what I get out of my running.
Good for you, Matty. I love it. So what a great start. I mean, it was a big build up, but the build up gave it so much context, but what a great close, I guess. So well done to you, mate. I'm inspired by it. I actually am, and I feel really good now on a Friday. And I'll ask you next time not to wear those cowboy boots either. That's a bad look on a Friday. Mate, people, we've got about 3 minutes left on the clock. I'd love you to come back online as we do. Timmy Grant's just said good morning. He's not listening in though. I'd like you to come back online. You know, if anyone wants to just say well done to you, Matt, or thanks, or is there any questions around Walk for a Bloke or Spoke to a Bloke or any questions in general? Let's fill the last couple of minutes and do so accordingly, please. Anyone got something? This happens, Matt. Don't worry about it.
Nah, it's all right.
I say it to everyone.
I talk too much anyway.
I say it to everyone, mate. Nothing happens. It's a combination of things, mate. It's mainly me.
Isn't Sandra usually one of the first ones to
chime in? Oh, well, who have we got?
Yo, man.
Hello.
Will here.
Just hello, Will.
Give a shout to Matt. Matt's on the Apple Night group again this year, buddy. So he's going to do the walk again. And on the group, he's already like giving us sorts of advices and supporting the people and cheering up the donations, telling us when double days come up, giving us all sorts of heads up and really supportive. I just sent a message to the team there that if you're missing this, you're missing actually an amazing life lesson. Tune up to Clay, listen to the podcast because what we're listening today is like brilliant. Great stuff.
Great mate. Stuff.
Well done. Yeah, great stuff.
Thanks, Will.
And on that highlight too, Matt's not only doing the up all night again this year, but his time management, ironically, given he's a reliability engineer, like his time management's shit because he's actually booked himself to do the walk all night, up all night. And when he finishes that, he has to start walk for a bloke or other way
walk
around.
Walk for a bloke first in the morning.
Warm up with 25 Ks and then do 45 that evening.
Should be good. If anyone wants to join me, let me know.
You don't even need a car anymore, Matt. You can just walk wherever you want, buddy.
Trust me, when he gets to my age, Willie will. There's no worries about that. All right, people, listen, have an awesome Friday. Have a good week. Do me a favor. Just take something. Just take something out of the conversation. It doesn't have to be anything I've said or Matt said, but just sitting here for an hour, Friday morning, reflecting, listening to different stories being shared and told. Take something for ourselves and just that 1%, right? Because that whole resilience game is just that 1%, that 1%. Just keep working and keep moving forward 1% and we'll all be better for it. So all the best, people. Have a great Friday, yeah?